Welcome to another podcast by Peter Hill. In Peter Hill Explains, where I talk about things scientific. I'm now driving home and I'm going to talk about something which came up in our staff meeting, and this is about graphs and charts. And both of these things are used to convey information, compare information. The important thing, I suppose, is looking at charts. They have a thing of being able to display different categories of something. So red, green, yellow, or something like that. Or cars and trucks, things which don't necessarily fit into a linear scale, a 1-2-3 scale, but they're different categories of things. And charts can be used to describe these. So you have a bar chart, and you can have a horizontal or vertical chart. So the horizontal chart fly up to the left. They go from the left to the right of the page. And this has sort of the advantage that you can have pages and pages of these charts, and you can see instantly what's going along. Whereas a vertical chart, the square starts from the base axis, goes right up to the top, to the data point, say from 0 to 10, and that can show you, allow you to compare values very much. So you have in a vertical chart, the categories are on the horizontal axis, and the actual throw of the chart, or the way that the chart increases, goes up vertically. Around here as I turn the corner here. Now, charts are one of the things are quite beautiful because they're semi-graphical, they're semi-artistic. Lawrence Nightingale famously used charts to show the rate of infections in hospitals and the hygiene, and showed that poor hygiene was killing more in hospitals, were killing more British troops than Russian guns around Sevastopol. And there are other beautiful charts where people have expressed the size of things in beautiful graphical form and allowed people to see things very easily. There was a very famous chart, and actually I think the chart may have been lost in history, but this is a chart that someone used to show the relative exposure of Australian banks. This is in the 80s under Keating. And it very effectively showed how Australian banks were exposed worse than some of the worst banks overseas. It's a very powerful chart. And by the time that he had, and this is I think before mobile phones, but even before the time this person had completed showing this chart, this one chart sent Australia into a recession. People suddenly woke up and realised what was going on. There's another famous, beautiful chart of... So the charts have the ability to move graphically, have some art in it. And there's a famous chart or diagram of Napoleon's armies. The width of the line is the width of the size of the army, and the position shows how the army was a large army, went into Russia, and then trickled out to a very tiny line showing the devastation to the army, a whole lot of things at one time. So charts have their use. And in science, you will be called, and in school, you'll be told to chart something. Different to a chart is a graph. Now, a graph is a space, a representation of a space. And it was developed by René Descartes. That's why it's called a Cartesian graph. And it's difficult to know that before Descartes and the time of Newton, formulas were very much described in paragraphs, and people would write long essays, say, on the inverse square law. There is a book book I've read called Newton Described for the Ladies, quite a condescending group, book, but it sort of says that if you're four times away from a lamp, the amount of power is 16 less, the intensity is 16 less, and guess what, at 25, and it's 25 less at five times the distance. And as you keep on going, it's great descriptive value. And to get around this, there's a representation of space as in a graphical form, the X and the Y axis. And we come across to some conventions here that the X axis is always what you do or what happens, you know, the passing of time or a change in something, and the Y axis or the moving upwards is the just waiting for these people to cross this pedestrian crossing, is the effect. So we call the x-axis the independent variable, the thing that you change, and the y-axis is the dependent variable, the variable is the thing, the result of that change. Now, the plotting of graphs, I think there's a very famous region where people plotted graphs, and there's a realization that the idea of there was a very aggressive drive there. So associated with graphs, if you don't believe in graphs, what you tend to believe in, you can hear me going across different things, is the integrity of information provided from the past. And this is very much true now, when I'm dealing with people now, they say this is true not because of maths, but because of the integrity of the people I'm dealing with. So I have that all the time. And now, it's hard to know that the world used to be really based on integrity, and people would not believe that if a famous person said something in the past, it was always true. Now, one of the most famous person, one of the very early philosophers, was Pythagoras, and he had a theory of music. And Galileo's father was a musician and was able to relate tension on strings to notes by weighing tensions, and actually, I think, measured a square root effect in a graph or graphical form, pre-graphical form, because Galileo was actually pre-graphs. Because graphs really exploded into the scene with Descartes and afterwards. So Newton was pre-graphs, so it's quite hard to understand. So they had a physical idea of physical space, of orbits and things physically moving, but they had no idea of a mathematical space made of two concepts, the X concept of what you do and the Y axis of what happens. This is the fundamentals of graph, and I'm going to have to park here soon. So one of the points in a graph is that you have a space, a picture of a space. So that area of your graph where the grids are is sort of a sacred area. An area on your paper represents two concepts in two directions, and you can actually only have a value of one concept resulting in a value of another concept. It's very hard to have a conceptual category. So those concepts that you represent in a graph can't be categories. They have to be something which is completely variable. Or if it's not completely variable, it has a value of precisely, say, one. So if it's a counting number, it's 1, 2, 3. Say the number of electrons somewhere. Or it can be a mass. Or something, or a volume, which can take any value. And this way, it maps out a complete continuous space, a fabric where the thread is infinitely fine. I'm just going to actually find a park. Just going around through here. I have to go around again. I found a park up here. Beautiful. I'll stop talking now as I go into the shops to buy this thing. Back with you pretty soon. continuing to record after a brief break of buying myself a set of knives, strangely enough, as I'm getting back out of this car park. So we're talking about graphs and charts, two very good things to describe the situation to people. So I talked about the chart which sent Australia into recession and I suppose had a good effect in the end. Many people have work but got us to restructure the economy and put us in a good stead for the global financial crisis. So both the aim of charts and graphs are to communicate things very clearly to people. A couple of cars going to appear. So it's the idea is to communicate things. Now, a chart, if you'd like, is sort of the baby version of a graph. So if you wanted to show how many tall cars you had compared to your friend, so all the friends in the street would pile them in piles and be able to see how high they are. Or wood for the winter, you'd be able to look and see people's wood piles. So it's a very much physical stuff. Or plates, different plates, you can see them stacked up vertically. So it's a very intuitive way, but it's actually not. It's very much in our world. You can imagine those bar charts being real things, whereas the graph is for is a concept versus concept space. And the concepts in generally can vary, in most cases can vary very minutely, infinitely small. So you can have it squint more and see the effect a bit more here. So in this case it might be the velocity of a car. I'm turning around the corner here. So a graph is a space, and this space can be infinitely fine. And there's sort of two aspects of it. There's sort of people imagine an ideal space where there's a line of curves in space. So as a chart tells a story, the idea is the passage of a line through this concept space of a graph also tells a story. So it may be your height versus your age. So different ages on the x-axis, your height. And you can see as a baby you grow up, stay still for a while, and you hit adolescence and you grow into a strapping young man or a beautiful woman. Just slow down here so I don't rear end sign. And so that line tells a story, and any instant in time, in any fraction of a second, your height will be something to a micron, to a very small couple of atoms high. So that line is actually a sort of an indicator, and if you really looked closely, it would be a very small line, a very fine, fine line, and that line tells a story. And so this, when you have a graph, it's a story. The title of the story is on the top, and on the bottom is basically, when I do this, and on the vertical axis, I get that. And just so you know, I have a scale on both of those. And there's two things. There's the line, but there's the actual data. Now, the data is for a particular value of time. If you say this time and height graph, what your height is, and you measure things, your time as best you can, and your time as best you can. It's like throwing a dart into where the actual height is at a particular time. And so getting data is sort of like throwing darts at this space and saying, look, this is where I think it is, but I know my measurements aren't good, and gee, I'm not the best in finding out what the time is. I can make lots and lots of mistakes, but here's a dart. And then a little while later, I throw another dart. That may be high, low, off to the left or right. It may have an error. Yeah. And if you throw enough darts, even though you don't get the actual line, and you can't actually connect all those darts directly because they're a little bit off. You have a smooth line. It tells you an underlying value of what you believe that line to be. And so you have this mixture of or a theory that people, a story of interpreting graphs that people don't necessarily understand. And graphs have really hailed a new age of scientific gentleness. So rather than deferring to the power of a law or a power structure to get a fact, you allow the graph to be a witness to your fact and tell the story for you. And this is something I think people don't get. People, you know, say, oh, I don't like graphs, I don't like maths, and oh gosh, it's a horrible world I live in, everyone's telling me what to do. Well, if you don't have graphs, the only option is to have big people, hopefully good people that you really like and have told you are really worthwhile, to tell you what to do. So that's a little bit deep. Now, in a graph, you mark your data. Now, your data point is actually a very fine point. So in this graph, any point is infinitely small. So you could, if you do a circle, that's almost a big blob on that graph. It's almost an insult to tell the person where you think the line is. It's usually nice to actually put a pair of crosshairs over your point to guide the viewer to where you actually think your very fine data point is. So crosshairs. And on top of your point, you can actually put error bars. So those crosshairs, when I say like an X, you then can have a sign of a cross which goes over that point, and the error bars will tell you how much certainty you believe that point is. So you, and generally, depending on what the size of your error bars is, it says that you're, it's more than likely to be within this range for producing it. And this, of course, tells a story that the user understands, that you're only throwing darts at the real line, which is underneath. And you can plot the real line underneath, and you call that a trend line and label it that. So a trend line is a way of saying, this is what I believe is actually happening. These two laws of nature are working together, fighting each other, and this is their story, the trend line. Now, there is a secret convention I'm going to be home relatively soon, that for that trend line, when it's actually stuck on a graph and it's done by real-world data, I believe this, I'm telling you that I go out into the world and I measure this person's height and he's between these two values. And I've been measuring since he was 6 years old, so I've got the lines up there. I lost track of him when he was 40, but here's the actual line, and here's all the data points, and here's the line across it. Now, after 40, you can say, look, he's not going to change his height that much, and so here's the line outward. Now, when you do the line outward, that's called an extrapolation, and it is good manners to tell people that your line is just an extrapolation by making it a dashed line, to say, look, it's here, but I'm not that certain, and you can dash it forward and dash it backwards. And it's very often that one wants to look at this trend line, so your trend line is solid where there's data, dashed where you're using your gut feeling, your knowledge, your goodwill to say where you think things should be. And it's, you know, often very good. There's a lot of justice comes out of trend lines because you say, from the past, I expect this in the future, and you can see if people are cheating you or against you if things can't go outside your trend line. But often you need to actually, in that trend line, say this trend line predicts this at this point in time. So take a value of your trend line. Now, it is also very generous to your viewer to say, this point of the trend line is so much, in this case, time and so much height. And the way to do that is to draw a line downward from your trend line, from the trend line down to the bottom x-axis and see the intercept of the x-axis and duly record that. And similarly for the y-axis, for the height, go up and do an intersection line, a horizontal line, going across to where your height is. As is its want, your height actually decreases with age. So your height line across for 40 years old will cross your maximum height, cross through your line to your height. But this way tells the viewer, this is the value in brackets, a little pair of data points. This is the value at this particular point in time. This is what I believe it is. And I've got my value there by actually, if you can look, here it is on the y-axis and here it is on the x-axis. It's a sort of a genteel way of telling a story. So with trend lines, you can do this several times, and in science we tend to do it with a straight trend line. We can do this early on, later, and find the gradient of that line. And by doing that, we would use those construct lines, very convenient construct lines, and work out the rise, how much things changes over how much input I put. And that is called the gradient. I'm coming home now. I hope that just by listening to this, I've introduced a bit of an idea for graphs and charts. So charts are bar charts. They're big, thick, heavy things. Graphs are intellectual, holding your intellectual hand out to people in a very gentle way, saying, you know what, if this happens, you get that, and this is the data, and this is the way I see the world, this is what happens, this sort of an honesty and an openness here, and it's quite refreshing. It gets you away from the bully world of, this is the way it is because I'm the boss, and I've heard that, I've got years of experience, look at me, I've got a big house, I've got lots of money, therefore I'm right. So I hope that gives you a view of graphs. I'm going to have to ride home. Unfortunately, I don't want to put this on. I'm going to pull over to switch this off. Yeah, so graphs. I suppose one of the interesting things in graphs is doing looking at that trend line and seeing the actual mechanism behind things. So it may be simply proportional to what you do, or it may be doubly proportional, or proportional to the square of something. And this is where the effect is increased by the presence of something. Now, there is a beautiful way of plotting. This is called graphical plotting. Sorry, log plotting, where you plot logs. I'm going to pull in here so I can switch off my mobile phone and say goodbye to you. Because I've had enough to speak to you. I like you a lot, my audience, but I'm just going to get home at this point in time. So, thanks for listening. I'm going to switch off now. In the meantime, keep on doing science.